Each day, all over the world, thousands of healthcare learners experience the power of simulation. This is the BS Podcast.
Wait, what?
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 Beyond Simulation, exploring the stories of the people behind these masterfully implemented simulations.
Each episode discovers the real stories of how these connoisseurs got into simulation and why they stayed. This is the Behind the Music Podcast of the world of simulation.
Hi, everybody. My name is Christine Park, and I'm the director of the Simulation and Integrative Learning Institute at the University of Illinois College of Medicine. And one thing about me that is not simulation is that I used to play piano when I was younger, and I was quite a serious music student. And recently, I want to have a return to music, so I decided to pick up the ukulele. I've had a few lessons, and now I am proud to announce that I can play 5 chords.
Get out, Christine. I can't wait for the concert.
Tour dates coming soon.
Exactly. My name is Bob Kaiser. I am the associate director at SAIL. And one thing about me that is not simulation related is that, okay, as a child, my parents realized that they had to get very specific with me regarding instructions. So picture this. My parents told me that if we went to the pound, I could get any puppy as long as it was a small dog. I could not get any large dogs. So immediately I looked across the pound and I found the one dog with a broken leg. My parents were like, really? So my old dog, which was Snoopy, I got from the pound. He had a broken leg and my parents were like, oh, we should have saw that coming. So anyway, if you meet me and you have to give me instructions, be very clear.
I love that story. And it just shows the compassion that's in your heart, Bob.
Well, thank you. I tell my parents that.
All right. So, Bob, are you ready to talk some BS?
Let's do it, Christine.
Actually, you know what? I just remembered that our guest for today, Keith Litterwood, wanted to share something. And so, Keith, go ahead.
Well, I know you guys always have these little tidbits that are entertaining and uplifting and so on. So I'm going to show my hand a little bit here. I have some terrible news. The Milky Way and the Andromeda galaxies are hurtling towards each other and could result in the end of the Earth. They're going at something like 70 miles per second as we speak. So we're 400 miles closer than we were when I started that sentence.
70 miles per second sounds like that's faster than the speed of sound.
It's pretty fast, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, before my voice got out there, the Andromeda galaxy was closer.
Yes. So what's going to get to us first, climate change or the Andromeda galaxy?
Well, the collision's in about 4.5 billion years. So I'm afraid we may extinguish ourselves before that collision does.
I was thinking, what does one wear to a collision, you know, of that magnitude? But I guess I don't have to worry about it now. So, okay, good. We're good.
I mean, it literally is kind of the sky is falling when you think about it.
Seriously?
Quite literally.
Literally, yes.
And so you will never have a guest bring a tidbit again. I've finished that, I see.
We try anything once on this show and check that box.
All right. Well, with that, it is my pleasure to invite to the podcast today our guest, Dr. Keith Littlewood. He is the Assistant Dean and Vice Chair of Anesthesiology at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you so much. I'm really looking forward to this. Glad to be here.
Well, let's start things off nice and easy. What are 3 things that you're professionally known for?
Oh, that's the easy question, eh? In typical fashion, I'm going to bend that a little bit and say I'm going to list the 3 things I hope I'm known for. And if you push me, I'll tell you what I really think I'm known for, but which may be very different. I hope I'm known as a blue-collar, in-the-trenches kind of person who doesn't ask other people to do what they won't do, whether it's clinically or administratively or in a society or what have you. I'm known as a pain in the neck, and that's at the individual level with residents and at board meetings. And I'm not saying I relish that, but I think it's an important responsibility. And what I mean by that is residents will say to me, the stuff you asked me about today and so on, that's not what I prepared for. That's not what I'm comfortable with, things like that. And my point is, yes. Yes, exactly. You know, we explored where you're comfortable and what you've mastered. Don't you want to get better? One of my biggest compliments was at a large retreat, and I was a very low level faculty member at that point. And an associate dean wrote a note to me and said, "Thank you for being the conscience of the group." Hmm. And, you know, I mean, you can tell it gets me now just to think of that note. I hope that's how I'm still seen, and not just that guy who's making trouble for the sake of making trouble, but, you know, I won't try to co-opt such a thing as good trouble, but to make trouble that means something. I hope I'm a mentor. I try to be. I give advice, whether it's asked for or not. I don't know how much impact it has, but it's out there. So I think that's how I would like to be thought of.
Thank you so much for sharing that. And as I reflect on the many conversations that you and I have had in the past, one thing that stands out to me as new is hearing you describe yourself as a blue-collar person or a blue-collar team member. Can you say more about what that means to you?
It's really interesting to me that sounds new to you. And I'm not saying it shouldn't. I just... But when I started this, I mean, the idea was, how are we perceived and how do we believe we are being in this world, right? So I grew up on a farm, and I think I have great respect for people who just get out there and do it every day. You know, whether it's a single parent with three jobs or, you know, the experiences I had in a poor farming community where people were just holding it together and working every single day of the year, and a holiday was maybe not doing chores between milkings and so on. You know, the society I grew up in is nowhere near perfect. I'm not trying to do a, you know, Norman Rockwell thing here. It was backward and undereducated and racist and misogynistic and so on. As many communities were at that time, and I'm afraid many are now, but that work ethic, that belief in fairness and honesty and integrity, as it was known to the individuals of that community, I have great respect for that. And that's what I strive to do. I mean, like I said, I want to be the person who doesn't turn to somebody and tell them to do something that I wouldn't do myself if I'm capable.
Thank you for sharing that. Okay, Keith, so let's go in a little different direction. Before the show, I spun a random number generator. I got the number 3. Out of 1 to 5, I got 3. I want to hear 3 things that are not on your CV or resume. 3 things that people may not know about you. Fun items. 3 things. Go for it.
Okay, as one of the most active reviewers in the country, I want to know a little bit about methodology. Where did this random number generator come from? You just made that up. Be honest.
Oh, I did not.
Okay. What was the range of possibilities?
1 to 5 on Google, and Google does not lie. So that's what it gave me, 3.
Well, I stand corrected. If it's on the internet, my apologies. As Abraham Lincoln said, if it's on the internet, it must be true.
Exactly.
Things that you don't know about me that I'm willing to share. Let's see. What would those be?
I want the...
Yes. See, you have to give me good instructions too, broken leg doggy man. I guess I lettered in a Division I sport. And the corollary to that is I was a big dumb jock. And thank goodness I met an incredible person to whom I've been married for over 40 years now, who saved me from that upbringing I was talking about before and from being a big dumb jock. My nickname was Moose. So there you have it. What else do you need to know, really, about my college experience, right? Picture me with a beer in one hand and a roving eye at any party. Ah, God, I was an awful person in many ways, really, gotta say. My current aspiration, I think, is to try to be the best grandparent in the world. Took my turn at being a parent, did my best. We did our best. But now it's being a grandparent, and it is spectacular. I'll use the throwaways. I like woodworking, kayaking, mountain biking, hiking, watching the Science Channel, finding out about colliding galaxies, so on.
And then sharing them with us. Wait, so maybe I missed this, Keith. What sport were you speaking about?
Oh, I rode. I was on a crew.
Oh, okay.
So in high school, one of the things that saved me was probably sports and SATs. Do you remember when multiple choice questions could actually be logicked through? I mean, they were, the questions just weren't that good. And thank goodness for me that I was in that era, because I went to a school with 50 graduates, which was the largest class ever, and had no preparation for college really, but slayed the SATs just because I had a sense of logic. And that and sports, starting to be the big dumb jock, got me to college, basically. And I could not afford to go to the state university in the next town, but I was able to go to Columbia. So there I am from the farm, at an Ivy League school in New York City. So my life has just been an incredible collection of wonderful accidents. And then I was walking across campus to go see if I could be on the cross country team, because that was one of my better sports in high school. But, you know, I was in the States and stuff, but they had like all American runners, so it really wasn't going to happen. And they had the shell out on College Walk, and it was a nice fall day. And this beautiful, they were made of cedar then from the Northwest. This beautiful shell is sitting there, and this bunch of guys are hanging out who just seemed really cool that I would like and stuff. And all of a sudden I was on the crew team. So there you have it.
I love that. Happy coincidences, but awesome.
Well, that and shiny thing. That's one of the driving forces of my life. Short attention span and shiny things.
Squirrel.
Okay, Keith. So now we are going to go a little further yet back in time. Give us a view into what was the energy of Kid Keith. Take us through a day in the life of Kid Keith.
There are wonderful things that happened on many days. I have wonderful memories of, you know, saddling up my horse and riding the fence up along the forest that it was adjacent to our farm. It was state land. We leased some of it, but had to make sure the cows didn't get out into the dangerous part of the forest. And riding out and finding the cow that was about to give birth and helping labor a cow helping pull a calf out and so on. And I mean, kind of romantic, nostalgic memories. In honesty, I also remember being desperately poor. Within a poor community, we were amongst the poorest. And, you know, wishing, coveting what others had, not, you know, in terms of things, but also in terms of the lives that seemed to to be there and that they would have in the future, and I knew that I wouldn't. And so it's an interesting mixture of wonderful things and of very scary and sad things. You know, watching my family members die from untreated disease, because the only time we went to a doctor is if you had a heart attack, stroke, or cut off a finger on the farm equipment. Well, I'm such a Debbie Downer. Between the trivia and these answers, this is not going to make it depressed. Come on, let's be honest.
Well, no, I think, but our past informs who we are, how we approach life, and this makes sense. I don't see it as sad or depressing or like that, Keith. I appreciate you sharing it, because I think so much of the time we can be Facebook happy. Let me show all this great stuff that's happening to me. And I think we all experience this stuff. Like, we have different experiences, different stories, but by sharing this stuff, we get to inspire others that, you know, where you are right now does not necessarily mean where you're going to end up. So thank you for sharing that.
Well, Bob, you know, I think that's so right. I mean, there's this importance of putting in a nice gloss on everything now, you know, and it drives me a little crazy sometimes. And I mean, there's a fine line between being, you know, talking about being a hero, overcoming, you know, raising yourself up by the bootstraps. And then, of course, one of the things I'm struggling with now is, you know, so I go to Columbia, I'm totally out of my depth. I work like a dog and, like, you know, Dean's List and killing it and being on the crew team and not a spare moment in the day, and just driven by anxiety and fear of failure and so on. And I pat myself on the back and say, well, I get imposter syndrome and I get what it's like to be an outsider and so on. And I do believe there's a little bit of that in my understanding. But, you know, the truth of the matter is my gender, my size, my race, they all let me get into the door pretty quickly. I worked really hard, and I don't want to diminish that. I'm very proud of it. But on the other hand, you know, I had privilege that I didn't even understand. I honestly don't think I've understood until recently, to be really candid. And so this idea of, you know, we've made it on our own when we were born on third base, or I think I was born on first base, but and had to steal second with the SATs. But, you know, I'm coming to understand that. And I hope it's making me better.
That really resonates for me, Keith, this the notion of a yes and on privilege. And it seems like often the discomfort with acknowledging one's privilege is that it's self-diminishing of the hard work that you put in. And so it could feel quite uncomfortable to claim that privilege, because, oh, then now people aren't going to respect me as much for how hard I worked, that kind of thing. But in fact, those things coexist, as you so eloquently put.
It's hard. But all good change is hard, you know. And I guess that's what I'm trying to work on right now. I'm struggling with it. But we need to struggle to get better, I think. It drives me crazy that today's learner, oh God, I'm going to start millennial bashing or Z bashing or whatever it is. Let me back up a little bit. That's not fair. It drives me crazy that we're starting to have an educational system, I think, where the expectation is it's not that hard to change your ways of thinking and practicing and being. But the truth of the matter is it's really hard. You know, I compare it with our residents and students with going to the gym. You know, if you've got to work at this, and you've got to challenge yourself, and you've got to hurt, and you've got to let go and be uncomfortable and so on. And I think when I was talking about blue collar stuff, that's one of the things that I try to do too. I tried to show to others that I'm, you know, I can do a lung transplant anesthetic in my sleep now, but literally like last night, but what do I do in terms of making my institution and community better, making my residents better, making sure we have more diversity and inclusion. And that I have to work at. I don't understand it. And I'm trying, and I'm not in a comfortable place. And I sometimes say stupid things, and I am that old white guy that doesn't get it. But I try to work on that. And it's uncomfortable. It'd be a lot easier just to go to work and play my role. And you know, Bob, going back to what you're saying, that doesn't make a good Facebook page, and probably doesn't make a good podcast. Sorry. So should we talk about something else?
No, Keith, and I want to say something about something that you mentioned, the word comfort, I think 4 times in your statement, comfort or uncomfortableness. And I think that the key is allowing a space for people to be uncomfortable. And me being a cis white male, to be comfortable in these to be uncomfortable in these conversations, to get comfortable with the uncomfortableness, because I can't change. If I'm staying the same, I'm going to be comfortable. So I love what you're saying, and that so much of the time in this process, well, I should be comfortable. Please make me comfortable. And that's not how change happens, at least in my life. I'm very bullheaded. I change with pain. I don't know why. And it's usually very uncomfortable. So I love what you're saying, and thank you for bringing this up. So, yeah.
Well, I think that discomfort goes even further for many of us because we thought we were the good guys, right?
Bingo.
We were the liberals. They always said the right thing and went to the marches and, you know, but what did we really do? At the end of the day, what did we really understand? And I can't believe, you know, it took, I mean, I was a child of the 60s and I was right there, you know, doing all the stuff you're supposed to do. But I'm now in the later decades of my life and I'm a little embarrassed at how little I truly understood. Truly empathize, or if there is such a thing, you know, of someone who is, you know, is not, whose life you can't completely understand. It's painful, but I think it needs to be. I'm blanking on the book, the workbook, Me and White Supremacy author. But I mean, one of the points is, you know, I'm sorry you're feeling a little sad. I'm sorry you're feeling a little uncomfortable. What's it like for the people that have been marginalized, you know, for their whole lives and their history? Right? So, yeah, and you don't get an award for doing it, and you shouldn't. You know, this is something we should have to do for ourselves to be better people.
Thank you for that. Bringing up all those topics. I feel like another podcast will be coming. But I am going to move on to another topic, as in this is called BS, Beyond Simulation.
Simulation, right. Okay.
What is that? So Keith, tell us what got you into simulation. What was that journey like?
Oh, shiny thing accident. That's my life. You can insert that answer anywhere if you want to edit this later. I was an engineer undergrad, and really I liked techie stuff, and got interested in simulation. But what really happened was, when I was at my former institution, the School of Nurse Anesthesia got a simulator, and my boss freaked out because he thought it should have been a collaborative effort and residents should be involved and so on. So he bought one. And I was a residency director, and he said, congratulations, you're now the director of simulation at our program. So, I mean, I was delighted on the one hand, but it wouldn't really have happened. And then when I came to the University of Virginia, Mr. Jefferson had not signed off on simulation yet, so there wasn't anything going on. And the director of emergency medicine, who's now a dear friend of mine, Marcus Martin, who later became executive vice president for diversity, he was interested in simulation. And he and I started up the program here, again, by accident. He happened to find out that I had some experience in simulation, said he wanted to start a program. I was my usual brash, snarky, young, kind of not such a nice guy, faculty member, and said it should be us doing it. And he taught me a little bit about collaboration in a very kind way, you know, didn't respond badly, talked it through, and we built what I consider a great program. So he's retired now, but I'll always be grateful to him for offering me the opportunity, but more for the mentorship. So yeah, accident, shiny things, both times.
Well, happy accidents. So then, Keith, what keeps you in simulation? Like, what, where does your passion lie?
Something, the space that I spend most of my time thinking about now is cognitive psychology and educational theory. And it's been wonderful for me because this is something I was interested in, you know, early on. When I was a kid, there was a great program where we could go to the local state university on Saturdays and take college level courses. And I found myself always doing education and psychology. And when I dreamed that I might be able to go to college, I think that's what I saw my future as. And it's kind of interesting at this stage to come back around to that in a lot of ways, to try to understand how we think and how we learn and how can we teach better and so on. And you know, I'm not as in love with the techie stuff now. I mean, it's fantastic. I mean, VR, AR, you know, wide deployment. It's incredible. It's great, but it's just a tool. And at the end of the day, what I'm proud of for all of us is that we're really changing the world for our patients, for patients everywhere, by not just bringing out whiz-bang toys, but also seriously facing the issues of how to make people better healthcare providers. And just talking about it, I'm excited just thinking about what patients are getting better care today. I mean, just walking down the hall and seeing one of my junior faculty members doing a quick debrief with their resident and medical student in the hallway. Yeah, they're not sitting down looking at a tape of a simulation, but they've learned the lessons of reflection and that, you know, immediate discussion of what just happened and hearing the expression, hey, so what were you thinking when we did this? And it's not like when I was a resident where the it would have been phrased, Littlewood, what were you thinking? Now it's, what were you thinking about when we made that decision? You know, and it brings me joy. I don't know how else to put it. It really does.
I love that you share that because I also feel that it's one of the hardest challenges for clinician teachers to overcome, which is to get away from the, I want to say parental, but that's not the right word, of sort of the chastising, let me tell you, and it's for your own good that I'm telling you these things, as opposed to letting the learner be the center of their own journey.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Yeah, I love the way you put that. And I think it is kind of parental. I mean, it's assuming, it goes back to a little bit about who are we, right? You know, what do I know about, I mean, if I'm your resident and you're my faculty member, what do you really know about my values, what got me here, how I'm going to take this quote unquote lesson, you know? And if your teaching is don't ever do that again, well, I'll never do that thing again, but I'm not a better doctor than I was yesterday for the discussion. So yeah, no, I agree. I think we've come so far in that regard of not just valuing the learner's journey, but celebrating it, really. I don't know if we're running out of time or not, but I've got one of those duh stories. Early on, I went out to the do an instructor's course and everything, and really fell in. It really fell into the idea that you've got to have a safe space where people can honestly share their thoughts and so on. And I think we all believe that in simulation. I mean, it should be rigorous and challenging, but it should be safe. So one of my residents was taking the faculty development session. I mean, since she's become our co-medical director and a good friend and colleague. But at the time, I said something along the lines of, you need to really make sure your learners feel comfortable in your interactions with them and being able to discuss what they were thinking and what they were feeling at the time. And she laughed out loud. I mean, just kind of lost it, you know, out of both, I think, nervousness and the hilarity of the statement. And what I had to realize is that I was a Jekyll and Hyde. You know, in the simulation center, I was sticking to what I said as if this were, and the craziness was, of course, I always said, this is just another clinical unit. Don't say the dummy, don't say real cases. This is a different patient in a different clinical setting. And then I was behaving differently as an educator in the two places. When I went back to the OR, I was old school, you know, don't ever do that again. How could you have done that to the patient? Do you not like him? What's going on? Yeah, I mean, all the kind of mean-spirited stuff, right? That was, and a lot of it was me showing off, if I really think about it, right? So I say all that to say that it's easy not to recognize, for me, it's been easy not to recognize my own behaviors that are so hardwired from my own training, from my own early experiences. And I'm grateful that she laughed at me that day. I mean, I was mad, I was a little bit hurt, but you know, kind of goes back to our earlier conversation, yeah.
It makes me wonder how much, if we really ask ourselves, is driving our need to kind of show off or our need for validation as we enter these kind of teaching encounters. And it reminds me actually of a, because I don't want to knock parents in their parenting, of a story where when my brother was little, he bit one of his classmates. And so, of course, the teacher called my parents and said, your son is, you know, biting other children. And my mother, because she didn't have anything to show off about, she just was curious, asked him, well, why did you bite, you know, your friend? And what my brother revealed is that he had seen that out at recess or something where some other kid was biting other kids. And he had never seen that before. He thought that was so interesting. He wanted to see what that was like. You know, they were about four. And so my mother learned something actually about what was going on, as opposed to, you know, you are a destructive, physically aggressive child, which he wasn't.
Oh, that's great. And I wonder how many parents of that era, I mean, I know mine didn't, ask that kind of question. You know, well, why did you do that? In my community, it would have been a much different kind of discipline, typically. Not many questions involved. Isn't it interesting? I mean, and what do we incorporate without even realizing? I mean, the automatic behaviors that we have, I mean, that fascinates me, you know, in daily life, but especially in clinical medicine, you know, where do they come from? And when they're not productive, how do we learn to monitor and control that? And I'm worried about our learners today because things are changing so fast. I mean, if you look at things like Epic order sets in a hospital, they change every few months. I mean, forget the shelf life of knowledge and all that, which we've known is getting shorter and shorter. I mean, we have to move to the point where learners are truly constant, lifelong learners. We've paid lip service to that for years, and we haven't done it. You know, we give them the tome of pulmonology and cardiac and so on, the preclinical years, and then we teach them how to take care of patients in the clinical years in medical school. And they get their stamp of approval. And what do they know about metacognition? What do they know about cognitive load and you know, true changes of ways of thinking and practicing? I think it's a failing.
Keith, you kind of started this whole conversation by what was simulation offering to the educational world. And the thing that kept going through my head is it's also offering the opportunity for curiosity, which if we're doing, you know, sims correctly, you know, it's curious, you know, what were you thinking? Or I wonder what would happen, you know, Christine's like, I wonder, you know, your brother, well, I wonder what that's like. I saw someone doing it. So, and sim is the place where we get to play and to get to be curious. And I think that learning comes from curiosity, or it comes from, you know, needing to be right or wrong or validation. I mean, wanting to, you know, get it right. But I think out of curiosity, I don't know, it makes sense to me. So,
Bob, what do you think about that in terms of demonstrating curiosity? I wonder if it isn't important that we actually demonstrate that to learners in ourselves. I mean, I think it's been very important for me to be able to say to people, hey, I don't know the factual answer. But beyond that, if I'm curious about how you're thinking and how you got to a point, I'm not saying that there was one way to get there and I'm going to tell you how to do it. I'm saying I want to understand how you think, how you feel, how you responded. And then we can think about the best way of continuing to do it well or to do it better next time. And I think we're valuing that in a way that I never saw in my own education.
Also, I mean, even with the facts, being curious about, you know, I think we make assumptions all the time. We have biases everywhere. So just teaching curiosity of like, I'm interesting. So where did that come from? You're not the lit, you know, in the literature or whatever, but, you know, kind of, I wonder how, you know, we came to that fact. Even that kind of curiosity, I think is, interesting compared to having to get the right answer. I think in medical school, I watch the learners all the time, you know, in simulation, especially, you know, assessments, you know, let me just figure out what the right answer is. How do I get to say the right thing for you to disclose to me your, you know, abuse or whatever, you know? And so I think it's this curiosity of, you know, of humans, of, you know, just, yeah, it's everything you said.
No, I really like that. And not just because you were agreeing with me. I think that's important. And, you know, it's really fascinating to me, you know, that you talk about how students have to have the right answer. I mean, we've got a patient in cardiogenic shock and they're perseverating over which, you know, drug to use to support, when the truth, just get something started that's good enough. You know, you really can go back to the, you know, getting away from the saber-tooth tiger schema. Just do something that's good enough. Hit it with a club, run, grab a rock, but do something that works for you quickly right now, because you're going to die or the patient's going to die if you don't do something. So I don't care if it's dobutamine or epinephrine or whatever. But they have to get the right answer. And of course they do, because that's exactly the way they have been groomed. And I know that's a bad word to use right now, but I think I'm using it as a bad word. We have pushed them into a lane where the way to succeed is to get the right answer. And how often is there the right answer, especially in clinical medicine? And so now all of a sudden we're surprised that they can't think of other, well, no, of course, this is the Frankenstein that we have, Frankenstein's monster that we have created, right? So I work really hard to talk to them about, okay, I want three differentials. I don't want one. And then I try to liberate them a little bit by saying, you know, it's actually easier from a cognitive standpoint to think of three things than it is one. Try it. And I share with them, when I read this data, I was like, no, that's wrong. That's wrong. And then I tried to go back to the original studies and found what I could. Okay, maybe it's true. And it's one of those things that, I mean, in my heart, I still don't quite believe it. But in practice and in teaching, I think it's really true. I don't know why. I don't like that. I don't know why. But, you know, so that is really uncomfortable for some of them. I mean, I can see it in their eyes. They're like, oh, old man's going off again on these silly theoretical things. But those that I can get to try it, I think they really start to understand how they have to reorganize their knowledge. You know, the moving between horizontal and vertical structures of knowledge. And you know, I think it may help. A lot of us talk about the aha moments in simulation. And I like those. I mean, we all do. It's instant gratification and it happens enough. But I think those next day, next week moments where they try something just a little different or push the edge to discomfort that they wouldn't have without discussion. I think those are the unseen moments that maybe matter more. Of course, maybe it's because I just don't teach well enough to have aha moments anymore, and I'm, you know, laying it off to that. But.
And yet, the adherence to, as a simulation facilitator, to feel that you need to see that aha moment, I think centers the motivation on the facilitator.
Yes, just what we were talking about before. Yep, makes us feel good, and we need it. A lot of us need it. I'm also known for my tortured analogies. When you're talking about you know, what you're known for professionally, tortured analogies.
Well, that makes two of us, so.
It's fun though, isn't it?
I'm in good company. All of this talk makes me think about the fact that how little of life is actually linear, or how, you know, little of anything is just a linear one-to-one correlation and so forth. And so with that in mind, I want to first acknowledge, of course, that we're all living in a metaverse, and there are multiple possibilities at all times. And so if you were prevented from doing anything that you currently now do professionally, so that is teaching, that is anesthesiology, that is simulation, in an alternate universe, what would the thing that you would be doing for a job be? And the rules of the game are that there's no financial worry.
Okay, first I'm going to give you the real answer, and then I'll give you the answer that you were probably kind of looking for. The real answer, and this is true, and you know, if any of my bosses are listening, they'll know. If I feel that I can't do what I'm doing right now in a way that is still productive and healthy for me, I walk away. I mean, I'm really fortunate. I'm so much different than my parents or the kids I grew up with and stuff. I can walk away from it if I need to. So the very short answer to your question is, I retire. That's not what you're really asking. It's what you know, in the alternate universe, what would have happened to Keith? And I, you know, I think I could have been quite content being the biomedical engineer that I started out as. I loved that stuff. Got to do some interesting stuff while I was at school, and would have been lined up to continue. Did some of the early Holter analysis on a computer that took up a huge room, climate controlled, and hard disk weighed about 20 pounds and was, you know, hard to reach around. I could have been, yeah, quite content. I have to say this career though has brought me real joy, and I think I have the best jobs in the world for me. You know, I talk to colleagues who say, hey, you know, they're looking for a chair here, they're looking for a dean there. And it probably sounds like compromise. Maybe it is to some extent, but for me, being a assistant dean and a vice chair is just enough juice to get done what I want, with less of the hassle, less of the heartburn, staying clinical. I think it has to do with staying in the trenches too. I mean, I don't sit in an office all day. I do a lung transplant through the night. And then I go in, I still do some simulations, a lot of administration, but it's frontline stuff. So I think I found the sweet spot that would be true in most of the universes, if we're talking string theory, I guess. But you know, I could have been a biomedical engineer too. I mean, God's honest truth, I think I could have been a farmer and been content. There are wonderful things about that life, in terms of being with nature and understanding the world and seeing the world in a different way. And I feel lucky to have had some of that experience. I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, again, I love what I do. It's brought me great joy, but it's just a job. I mean, coming home to the person I love, spending time with family and friends, enjoying different tastes of the world. I mean, that's kind of what it's all about. So did I dodge that pretty well?
I love your answer. I think you're absolutely right. And, I think by thinking about a metaverse, it doesn't necessarily mean it's, different in every version. So yeah, love it.
Yeah, I think that's right.
So Keith, one great thing about simulation is that we receive feedback and reflect on the choices that we make or have made. So what is one choice that you encountered in your life that, if you had chosen it, would have taken your life on a completely different path?
I mean, I'm going to say I don't wish that I had chosen differently, because I think where we are comes from all of it. The expected, the unexpected, the intended, unintended, and things we don't even know that happened because of our choices, right? So I love my life. And that wasn't your question, but I just like saying it. So there you go. One of the things professionally that would have changed my life was I was really struggling in engineering school. I wasn't nearly as prepared as all of my colleagues. They'd gone to Bronx Science and Boys Latin and, you know, Exeter and so on. And I'd gone to Morris Central School. I really struggled and I was scared and I knew I didn't belong there. I was very clear. I mean, socially, academically, you know, the clothes I wore, the money I had to available. I mean, I did not belong there. And the senior associate dean called me in and said, kind of rough on that first chemistry test, huh? And I said, you know, I think I'm, you know, I can't do this. And he took me out to Tom's Diner. It's the diner in Seinfeld on the outside, you know, with a red neon. That's Tom's up by Columbia. And he bought me a piece of pie and a cup of coffee, the corniest thing ever, right? And I mean, right down to, don't you want some ice cream with that? I mean, it was like just the corniest thing ever. But he said, I know that you can do this. You know, from talking to you, from looking at your scores, I know it's going to be really hard, but we'll help you. We want you to succeed. I want you to succeed. And sitting there across from him, I made the decision that I would give it another try. I mean, I literally was thinking about packing up my stuff that night. So that's the decision that would have led to a very different life. If in Tom's Diner, sitting across from Jerry and, you know, George, I had not decided to give it one more try. And that really, that's who I try to be now. I mean, we all know people who are struggling without knowing exactly what they're going through necessarily. And I remember Dean Vreeland and think, you know, gosh, can I do that for somebody? And again, it's not one of those things. I mean, sometimes you get the thank you and, you know, it's wonderful, but I mean, often we don't know. Maybe we helped, maybe we didn't, but man, it feels right to pass it on.
That's great. And sometimes we all just need that piece of pie. And
it sounds so trite if you write it out, but the moment was so powerful. And I think that we underestimate, I think one of the things I'm coming to realize, we often underestimate our own, I mean, power is not the quite the right word, is it? It's influence or the impact that we can have. We think that we can't change the way things are, or that we can't help this person, or that, and you know, usually we can't do that much. But man, you never know when that one moment could really change somebody's life.
Well, Keith, I can attest to that you have done that for me. So you can check off at least once, and I'm sure there have been many more. I'm sure there have been many more.
That was so kind of you to say. That brings me happiness.
Okay, Keith. So if you have listened to our podcast at all, you may know, or maybe not know, that we love to play a little game here at BS, Beyond Simulation. We love to put 60 seconds on the clock, and we love to ask a grab bag full of questions to you. So just random questions, you know, one or two words are great. No judgment. We just, you know, we'll just keep asking questions until the 60 seconds run out. And Christine, once you ask the first question, I'll start the timer.
Right. Okay, Keith, what is a fictional character that you like?
Atticus.
Okay, and what is your favorite word or one that you really like?
Nonplussed is the one I like used correctly.
Great.
Love it. What is the most recent thing that surprised you?
This podcast. Pleasantly.
Good. I'm glad it's been pleasant. Is there life beyond Earth?
Yeah.
What is a song that always gets stuck in your head?
Fire and Rain often comes to me.
Hmm.
My wife and I argue about whose funeral will be played at.
Okay.
Your laughing doesn't come off my time. I'm a very competitive person. I want some structure here.
I'm just thinking of a downer time kind of thing, but it's okay. Okay, what's one thing you own that you really should throw out?
My yearbook from high school.
Last question. Describe the rest of your life in 5 words.
Joyful, grandparent, spouse, citizen, curious.
Love those. All right, so Keith, we're coming around the bend.
Did I win? Was that the best flash performance ever on your show?
Gold. It was the best flash performance today, and you get a gold. And you get it. And you get a gold star.
And you are the best interviewers I've had today. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Thank you.
So as we get ready to kind of bring our conversation to a close, we'd like to invite you to think about one person who was meaningful to you in your life. And it doesn't necessarily have to be somebody that you knew or know. What is something that you learned from them, or what is something that you admire about them?
I know this sounds like a cop-out in a way, but it's my spouse. It's my wife, Erica. She has taught me so much about being a good person, what love is. And you gotta understand, she took a poorly formed, kind of awful young man and fell in love with him anyway, and stuck with me, and has shown me what it is to be you know, the best person one can be. I don't know how I won that lottery, but that's the best thing to happen in my life, and that's been the greatest influence on me as a person. Everything else comes from that.
Wow. Now I want to meet Erica. Okay, Keith. Well, first of all, I just want to say it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the podcast. Thank you for sharing so much of, you know, who you are, you know, how you view the world. I know that after we end this podcast, I'll be thinking about a lot of things that we talked about. And I just appreciate your vulnerability. So thank you so much. So with that said, last question. What is one hope that you have for simulation in the future?
Yeah, I guess my hope is that we don't think too small. I wasn't trying to be grandiose when I said we change the world, we make the world better. But I don't think we embrace that and push harder on that. I mean, are we including everybody that could benefit and would relish the opportunity to be involved? Are patients in all communities benefiting from this? Do we understand fully the impact we're having, and do we leverage that? I mean, we tend to talk about, you know, well, we don't have as many central line infections, or our code team works faster now, and so on. But you know, I think we change the way healthcare providers are going to be the rest of their career, both as practitioners, but also as learners and teachers of others and of patients. And I think, what better educational modality is there if we wrap up, you know, and I'm biased, these are the things I'm interested in, but if we wrap up educational theory and cognitive psychology in the package and then look at the way we're changing people, who can do more than we can to make a patient safer tomorrow?
Thank you for sharing that. That is so true. Well, Keith, I would like to thank you so much for being our guest on the podcast today. You and I have had the great fortune of having shared a lot of conversations in the past. And I remember the first time that I met you, I was struck by your openness and your curiosity and your willingness to give of yourself for that particular group. And I'm so glad that everyone who listens to that will have the fortune of having a little taste of that. So thank you so much.
Oh gosh, I'm getting a little teary. It's been, I was really looking forward to this, and you know how so often things are a disappointment when you think they're going to be great. This was even better than I expected. I really, really enjoyed this, guys. I can't wait until things get normal enough to have these conversations over some food with a drink or two.
This has been BS Beyond Simulation with our guest, Dr. Keith Littlewood, with your hosts, Christine Park and Bob Kaiser. See you on a future episode.